Audiologist, a Phonak podcast.
Welcome to The Audiologist, a podcast created by Phonak to offer audiologists and other healthcare professionals new perspectives on hearing health topics. At the microphone is Anna Biggins. I'm working as an audiologist at Sonova. Imagine you wake up one day and you hear like this.
This time, we went south to Costa Calida. Have you heard of Costa Calida? We thought, why not go to Spain in November? Everything
here. This is what sounds can be perceived like for someone with what is commonly referred to as single-sided deafness, or unaidable hearing loss on one side. Some people are born not being able to hear out of one ear, but for others it can come on suddenly, either due to illness or traumatic injury to the ear. So they experience a dramatic shift in their ability to hear and process acoustic information. The effects of single-sided deafness in terms of cognitive, social, emotional, and physical well-being are still underestimated. But what recent studies show is that children with unilateral hearing loss who have the largest asymmetry between their ears report the most overall fatigue. Adults with single-sided deafness were 5 times more likely to report severe fatigue than adults with no hearing loss. Listening effort and hearing fatigue are now known to affect people with unilateral hearing loss as much and sometimes more than those with mild moderate hearing loss in both ears. This is why I am happy to talk to a leading expert about this topic today. It is a pleasure to introduce Dr. Hilary Snapp. Dr. Hilary is the Chief of Audiology and Associate Professor at the University of Miami Ear Institute. She is a clinician scientist carrying out research in hearing implants and auditory spatial perception. Dr. Snapp has also established the Auditory Spatial Laboratory at the University of Miami, which focuses on identifying behavioral and objective markers of hearing and includes novel methods of evaluating spatial auditory perception, speech recognition, and processing of acoustic signals. So welcome, Hilary.
Thank you, Anna. It's a pleasure to be here.
So from this introduction, it's clear to me why you have an interest in people that have single-sided deafness and varying degrees of unilateral hearing loss. In your own words, what is it about this field of work that interests you?
Indeed. Yeah, I've spent a lot of my time working in this population in individuals with single-sided deafness. And for me, what I would say is, as a clinician first, my goal is to, of course, improve the lives of people living with disabling hearing loss. And I think that while today we are increasingly aware of the detrimental effects of single-sided deafness, this wasn't always the case. You know, early in my career, I had the opportunity to take on and develop a specialty practice in single-sided deafness and addressing the needs of those patients. And mostly, you know, this happens early in your career because as you come in as a new and energetic clinician, you get asked to take on the cases or the work that maybe others don't have the time to do or really have not had enough interest in. And so I'd worked with single-sided deafness patients in my training and, of course, you know, got the job and the assignment to help figure out how to manage this population, which at the time still was really underrecognized. You know, we really didn't know a lot about how to navigate single-sided deafness. And I think there was still a lot of confusion around the fact that some of these patients really have a lot of self-perceived disability, while others seem to be okay. I really became very quickly passionate about this group. I recognized that they suffer from an invisible disability that's really underrecognized, that they live their lives with every day. I became acutely aware of the broad impacts that single-sided deafness has on them and the lack of understanding not only from their own personal relationships and the people they engage with every day in their life, but even from the clinical community. And so I really became invested in it and working with it. And of course, you know, here we are today, several years later, and single-sided deafness is a leading topic in our field that we're really focused on addressing.
You've alluded to this in what you've just said as well. And this configuration of hearing loss, why do you feel it's different to having a hearing loss in both ears?
Bilateral hearing loss is really challenging, right? You know, especially as the loss increases in degree. But in single-sided deafness patients, you have one normally functioning ear, okay? And this certainly provides some advantages in some cases. However, SSD is characterized also by unique challenges, very different from those with bilateral hearing loss. having hearing in two ears, particularly normal and symmetric hearing, is really what enables us to manage complex acoustic environments. It's what enables us to easily process acoustic information. And so hearing in two ears, or what we normally refer to as binaural hearing, allows us to integrate information from each ear and compare those signals. And the brain takes that information and compares those signals in terms of timing, loudness, spectrum. So for example, if a signal is presented directly in front of a listener, each ear, the right and left ear, are going to receive that signal at the exact same time and the same level of loudness. And our hearing brain knows exactly where that signal is just based on those auditory cues, those cues between the two ears. Even if we take away our visual cues, we are very accurate at understanding that signal and determining where it's located. But if you were to move the signal just 10 degrees to the right, for example, the signal received at that right ear is going to be slightly louder and received slightly faster than it is at the left ear. And this is due in large part to the acoustic shadow that's created by the head and the torso, okay, which acts as a physical barrier to the sounds. And then what happens is this will result in an attenuation of the signal at the ear that's not directed at the source, the far ear, in this case, the left ear. And so sounds arriving at the ears from different locations in space allow listeners, binaural listeners, to take advantage of these spatially separated signals to improve the signal-to-noise ratio. And this is really important, right? Our ability to understand speech and background noise is seemingly easy for two normally hearing ears. But as we start to develop hearing loss, in particular, asymmetrical hearing loss, this can be really challenging. So when the ear closest to the signal will benefit from that shadowing of the head, right? To block noise that would otherwise mask that signal. And again, our brain is going to take these cues. It interprets them automatically with a lot of ease, right? Seemingly, you know, without any effort, we are just able to do this with two normal hearing ears, and then enables us to both locate the sound. So for this most extreme version of asymmetry and hearing loss, single-sided deafness, the primary deficit a patient is going to experience is inability to localize the sound, poor speech perception and noise, particularly at that deaf ear, and even just awareness of sound. You would be really surprised at how debilitating it is for a listener to just simply not be aware that someone is next to them or speaking to them. And so these are kind of the unique challenges that individuals with SSD face every day.
It's absolutely fascinating to hear it explained so clearly and so well to me. And I have to say that even though as a clinical audiologist who has fit and supported many people in the past with single-sided deafness, I was unaware until I read your paper just how much of an impact without appropriate support or intervention it can have on someone's daily life. Could you outline here for myself and other listeners here what these are that you kind of describe so clearly in the paper in terms of kind of like the more social emotional effects that this also can have?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for those of us working in this space, we know it intimately because we experience our patients and we get a very close and upfront perspective of what they deal with in their daily lives. But for many people living with this condition, you know, the individuals living with single-sided deafness, the lack of understanding or awareness on the effects of their life by those around them, you know, the people they live with and work with and socialize with, can really create an increased burden for them and negatively affect their working and social lives. You know, many of these patients are incredibly impacted. They express frustration with the lack of understanding and even experience a lot of embarrassment. And so what results from single-sided deafness, because of the way the ears work together and the deficits from losing one ear, what will happen for a patient who lives with and experiences single-sided deafness is that in a quiet environment, you know, the good ear can do all the work, right? They can hear really well as long as the signal is uncomplicated by competing noise or other acoustic factors. Individuals with single-sided deafness will communicate really, really well. But the resulting disability is really very situation specific in the sense that when someone is sitting on their bad side, and again, that shadow prevents them from being able to hear very clearly, or when there's noise in the environment, it will create real challenges for the listener and elevate what we call the invisibility factor for patients compared to somebody with, for example, bilateral hearing loss. And so this effect of where, as long as it's quiet, a person with single-sided deafness seems to be able to communicate really, really well. And then suddenly, the introduction of even just a little bit of competing noise can entirely shift their ability to communicate, even remove them from the conversation, can be confusing for the others that they're communicating with. And so patients with SSD, because of this, can often be characterized as rude or dismissive or aloof, because in one moment they seem to be able to communicate fine, and then the next, all of a sudden, they're not able to do that. And, you know, it only really, as I mentioned, takes a small amount of competing noise to really shift an SSD listener from being able to communicate to not. You know, with my patients, a lot of times when they bring their significant others, I'll tell them, if you're talking with your partner and you're in the kitchen and you think that they're going to be able to communicate with you with the faucet running, for example, this is not really possible, right? Just even that little bit of interfering noise can really be debilitating for them. And so, you know, one of the things that we know, and what you mentioned earlier in your introduction, is the effort that has to be applied for an SSD listener. And we know that in severely asymmetric loss, the SSD listener, the signal-to-noise ratio that's required to understand speech varies whether the signal is at the impaired ear or the better hearing ear. And specifically, the talker will need to be significantly louder than the noise when on the impaired ear. And so what does the SSD listener do? They have to compensate. And how do they do this? A lot of times they're doing this using physical compensation. So they're physically moving their body, turning their head to direct the better hearing ear towards the signal of interest, in this case, speech, to improve that signal to noise ratio. But you can imagine in at a party or, you know, a restaurant or something where you're having to do this, not for just a few minutes, like in a clinical environment where we're testing hearing and noise, but really out in their everyday life, this can be incredibly fatiguing, right? And for some patients, also elevates insecurities, right? And how they're behaving with the people they're communicating with. But beyond this, the brain simply just has to work harder to pull out and extract that signal of interest from the background noise. So this involves focus, concentration, effort. All of this is elevated in these patients and can lead to other physical effects. You know, many of our patients will complain of things like headaches or anxiety. So, you know, these psychosocial consequences are not small. You know, they can vary by SSD listener, but in many of these listeners, it can really impact their working and social lives.
Yeah, and that sort of leads me to this next question, because obviously I think that people find coping strategies, and this may obviously then lead to them becoming using so much more effort because they're very good at hiding these issues that they may have to try to avoid embarrassment. But in your opinion, why do you think that this type of hearing loss hasn't had so much attention given to it in the past?
It circles back to the point we've talked about or touched on already a few times. It's just that lack of understanding, the misperception that one ear is good enough. And, you know, I think in the last, you know, decade or two, we've really come a long way in understanding that we need two ears to really function well, especially in those complex situations and to do these more advanced auditory tasks. The fact that, again, seemingly in certain environments, patients with SSD appear to do fine and communicate well can create a lot of misperceptions. The other challenges, too, is understanding what are the cues that we need to improve our ability to perform in these environments. The next step, of course, is treatment. So I think when we don't have optimal treatments on the table, that also can influence our interest in navigating and looking into solutions for patients. As clinicians, I think we want to solve the problem. We want to help patients hear. We want to help them communicate better in their everyday lives. And when we don't have the solutions available to give to them, it's easy to maybe to at times dismiss their needs. And so fortunately, in the last, you know, several years, we've had a lot of advancements in this space. There are a lot of different therapeutic and rehabilitative options on the rise for SSD. And this has indeed increased the amount of energy and effort towards research, technological advancement, which is really bringing these patients to the forefront of the conversation and disabling hearing loss.
And so that leads really nicely into my next question. What type of devices, systems, or coping tools do you use or recommend for this group? And on the contra side of that, is there some clients that you would not recommend, for example, something like a cross system to?
The thing to understand about this, which feeds into these perceptions we were just talking about earlier about why there may not be as much of attention on single-sided deafness, is the reality is with all different types of hearing loss and configurations of hearing loss, but especially in the SSD population, is that disability varies widely by individuals. And we really have to understand more than just the auditory profile. We have to have a dedication to understanding each individual's lived experience in the world. We know from research that there are the ability to predict someone's disability just based on the audiogram is actually poor. So we really have to get these people into the office. We have to understand what their needs are and speak with them about those needs. And so, you know, of course, the gold standard, as we think about ourselves as scientists and clinicians, is hearing restoration, right? That is the gold standard. That is really the goal that we're all striving for. But as a field, we're just not quite there yet. But nowadays, for the right patients who meet the right criteria, things like hearing implants, cochlear implants in particular, can provide direct input to the ear. And while this doesn't fully restore binaural hearing, of course, in the right candidates, can provide speech understanding, improvement in their ability to localize. But for those who are not good candidates for a variety of reasons, duration of deafness, because of the anatomy of the ear, or those who simply do not want or need a surgical solution, maybe their disability isn't at that place, we can use things like contralateral routing of signal to address some of these situational deficits and challenges we talked about. You know, specifically, contralateral routing of signal has been shown to improve the signal-to-noise ratio at the deaf ear. And so in this case, you know, what we're doing is replacing a microphone on the impaired ear, and we're routing it to a device worn in the better human ear, which provides sound awareness on that bad side, which we talked about is alone can be very debilitating for some listeners. And noise will alleviate some of the negative effects of the acoustic head shadow that SSD listeners experience.
I know that you're working with different kinds of solutions right now. So could you give us a little teaser, perhaps, into some of the studies that you're doing with regards to contralateral routing of signals? And maybe what do you expect to find, or what are you hoping to find?
Yes. So in our lab, in my lab, we're specifically interested in understanding the cues that listeners use to improve their ability to localize and to understand speech. You know, we talked about this earlier. You know, the binaural hearing condition is taking these timing level and spectrum, this information, and at a very, very finite level, interpreting this to enable us to do really complicated things in a really complicated world, right? Where the signals are dynamically changing and overlapping. And again, you know, we do this with a lot of ease, and the SSD listener really struggles in those environments. And so we're interested in understanding those cues and how do we use those cues to improve our ability to do these things. And the gap as a clinician scientist that I see is the challenge or the inability in the clinical space to assess this in a way that will inform us on how a patient might perform in their everyday life. So what we're interested in the lab is in these behaviors, right? What are the behaviors that listeners employ to leverage cues to improve their listening situation? You know, as we discussed earlier, an SSD listener turning their head constantly, and how does that actually help them? And how can that maybe impede their ability to perform well? And then, of course, what we want to understand is what is the relationship of the cues and the behaviors to their overall effort, to what they have to do on a daily basis to maintain themselves in the conversation, to limit the effects of this in causing fatigue or other physical effects. So we're really excited about doing that work and continue to work with these devices in this population.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see some of these results. It's an exciting field for sure. If I may ask one last question, what would be your top three pieces of advice to a clinician who has someone come into their clinic today, for example, with single-sided deafness? What would be your top three pieces of advice to maybe check or ask that person when they come to see you?
Yeah, so I think when I'm working with patients and then, you know, other clinicians who are interested in managing individuals with single-sided deafness and working in this space, you know, I think the most important thing is really understanding the deficit. know, as I said earlier, it can vary from patient to patient. Not every patient has the same needs. Not every patient experiences or perceives the same level of disability with their single-sided deafness. That is critical, you know, really taking the time to understand what is it that is causing the disability for them? What is the primary goal of the patient? You know, sometimes, especially when we talk about sudden onset of SSD, you're talking about a patient who started with two completely normally functioning ears and suddenly and often traumatically loses one ear. And I think patients need the time and the space to process that. They need the time to adapt to that condition so that they can make a really informed decision on what's the right treatment solution for them. And so, you know, making sure that they understand really well what their own personal need is and what the different devices can do for them is critical. We have patients who come in sometimes who have lost their hearing due to a sudden, you know, viral insult, and that may be accompanied by extreme tinnitus or vertigo. And a patient's primary interest, if you don't ask them, why are you here today? You might assume it's about the hearing. And sometimes it's about the vertigo. Sometimes it's about the tinnitus. And, you know, a cross device or even an implant may not improve or address that need. So we then have to route that patient back and make sure that they're getting the treatment for that issue and then bring them back when they're ready to address the hearing piece. So I think that's important. You know, one, understanding what's their deficit, what's the disability that they're looking to address? You know, what is the primary need that they have at that day? And then two, thinking thoughtfully and critically about your toolbox. What are the treatment options or therapeutic or rehabilitative options on the table that you have for this patient? And do they match that need? You know, in some cases, you know, if somebody really needs to localize, that's important for them. I do a lot of work with firefighters that localization is really important for them. That's a patient who you want to consider an option that might give back some binaural input to them. But a patient who is situationally affected and not interested in a surgical solution, that's a patient who you may want to really encourage them to use a non-invasive treatment solution like a cross. And so thinking about those things is really important. And then lastly, you asked me for three.
Yes.
I think the third and final thing is, you know, continuing to monitor and follow up with your patients and use the methods that we have available to us to assess their benefit so that you can provide realistic expectations for them, right? So we can use speech perception measures and spatial hearing measures to understand where they are today and use them to evaluate how they do with that device. It can really help us to guide them and to establish realistic expectations. And then overall, what I experience in my clinical practice is that this goes a long way, being able to have that conversation with them and give them a map of how they're doing with their devices really helps them to accept that this is not, you know, restore hearing restoration. This is not two normal hearing ears, but this is what you're able to do. These are the gaps that are still there, so that they have a pathway to managing their real life and the world that they're engaging in every day.
So if I can just summarize, and how I've taken that is kind of one, really listen to them and establish what their needs are and why they're coming to see you. Two, choose the appropriate tools and things you have available to you in your toolbox and evaluate whether that's the right way to go with this specific person, because everybody's different and individual. And then three, continue to monitor and help them to sort of rehabilitate and on their journey, and continue to give them goals and realistic expectations as to how they're going to cope in real life situations. So perfect information and advice to give anybody, I think, when they get faced with somebody with single-sided deafness in their clinic. So thank you so much, Hilary. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Anna. It was a pleasure speaking with you today.
So I think you'll all agree that this has been a truly fascinating podcast today. And if you want to learn more about the topic and actually find out more about Dr. Hilary's work, you can find a link to her papers in the show notes of this episode. We also have an audiology blog on this topic, as well as a verification guide on how to assist you in fitting cross. These can be found on www.phonak.com. And you can also find links to these in the show notes of this episode.
Audiologist, a Phonak podcast.